Hello, I'm Daniel. This is my podcast, Sharpening the Mind. I am a meditation teacher and also a labor activist in Kansas City, Missouri. I teach classes in meditation and Buddhism at the Rime Buddhist Center, as well as a few other places. Thank you for listening and have a great day. So today, we're going to talk again about love and compassion. In the book Buddhism for Beginners, the nun, Thubten Chodron, says the following, and I quote, "Love and compassion benefit ourselves and others. With them, we feel in touch with and connect to all living beings. Feelings of alienation and despair vanish and are replaced with optimism." End quote. So I like that a lot. That's what I think. I think love and compassion connect us with other people. And I think to an extent, I would say life's about connecting with other people. I used to tell myself a story about myself, that I am an introvert and that I don't really like other people that much and that I'm happier on my own, blah, 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 blah. And I told myself that story until, and I also included in that story was like, I don't need these love and compassion teachings because I don't even like other people that much. I want to still the mind. I want to subdue my mind thoroughly, right? I want to decide what I'm going to focus on. I want to attain enlightenment, right? So I thought I could put this stuff on the back burner and not worry about it. And I realized I was wrong. Love and compassion could be the whole thing. But I was telling myself this story that I was introverted and I realized I was wrong. When did I realize I was wrong, you may wonder? 2020 is when I realized I was wrong. When, you know, a lot of things shut down. And there was a lot of time spent trapped, you know, in our own houses, reasonably trapped. Not really. We weren't really trapped like in some places, but, you know, it was very isolating. It was very isolating. And I realized that I wanted more socialization than I was getting. And I got some. I have 4 kids. I was working from home. My wife was working from home. All 4 of my kids were doing school at home. I was never alone. But still, I realized, oh, I need something different to be added to this. I'm not introverted. I like social interaction. I like also being the center of attention. So that narrative I was telling myself about being an introvert, I think that was always untrue. But we do that, right? We tell stories. We tell stories. We worry about the future. We worry about what other people are doing. And we tell stories about ourselves, too. So that self-talk, you know, sometimes we have that thing where it's like, I can't handle this. This is too much for me. That sort of thing too. Those are usually wrong too. So, okay, so the pandemic happened, right? And around the time when things were shut down, it was hard to get appointments, places, blah, 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 blah. I found out I have a gene for a heart condition. And that condition is called Brugada syndrome, okay? Don't look it up. You shouldn't. But I found out I have this gene. It's in my family. My brother has it too. And his son has it. And the symptom of this ailment is my heart could just stop. That's if I develop Brugada syndrome, that's what could happen. And so I found out I have this because of genetic testing. And so my brother gets me the information of his cardiologist, supposed to be like the best one in the Kansas City area. This doctor works at KU Medical Center. So you don't need to know that. I don't know why I shared it, but so I got to get an appointment with this cardiologist. Wow, I'm building a bridge here, aren't I? So I got an appointment with this cardiologist, and at this time it's May. And late April, early May. And I make this appointment in December. in December, right? And until I see this cardiologist, I don't know how serious my situation is. Okay? You following me? So I have uncertainty, the pandemic, when am I going back to work? When are these kids getting back to school? Are these kids all going to fail at school, right? Am I going to fail at work? Because let me tell you, you guys, you people that can do online classes, online work from home work, something about that makes it a struggle for me. Something about that makes it a struggle for me, but I'm glad other people can do it. So even like online meditation groups, that's not my thing. That's not my thing. So I can communicate with a teacher online and get something out of that. But community to me does not work online. But I'm glad it works for other people. So the point is I'm super isolated, right? And I'm worried about all these outcomes of the pandemic. At this time, nobody knows what's going to happen, right? And I'm worried about my own personal heart health. Oof. Right? So I'm dealing with all this and I'm struggling with all this. And I'm thinking about how I'm going to deal with it. And, you know, my community, the Rime Center, stopped meeting in person. Of course, they're meeting online. But again, I'm not good at that. I don't think I'm good at that. Anyway, it doesn't sit right with me, and that's fine. I'm glad it works for a lot of people. I'm glad it worked for a lot of people, and the Rime Center was able to survive when in-person meetings weren't happening, but because some communities didn't. But I have this thing to deal with, right? And I dealt with it two ways. One, I had just bought a house, so I have a new house. And I bought it, and I'm told that very soon after I bought a house, it became a very bad market for buyers. It became a very bad market for buyers. It was moderately bad when I bought mine. Like, I bid on six houses before I got my house. But anyway, I found a spot, like, in the side and back of my house where there used to be a step garden. And it was just overloaded with leaves and stuff. And weeds. So an aspect of how I dealt with the pandemic was pulling weeds, raking leaves. And I found a statue back there of a Christian saint. Saint of gardening, I forget his name. He's still there. But it inspired me. And I was like, oh, I'm going to collect Buddha statues and fill this place with them. It's going to be great. And I did. And it is. I call it the Garden of Virtue. It's great. But so I did that. So I started collecting statues. You know, mail order, they deliver them to you. I set them up in that area. And actually, after people started finding out I was doing that, a few people actually gave me statues. I drove to Jefferson City, Missouri, which is like 3 hours away, to get a statue because it was a very good statue. But anyway, a very good statue from Southeast Asia. But anyway, so that was one of the ways I dealt with the pandemic. But the other way is this. I read this book. I picked up this book because heart was in the title. And I got it on Amazon, I think. I was ordering, like a lot of people, I was ordering more things online than I probably should have in the pandemic, you know, including meals, right? Like DoorDash made a lot of money. I should have invested in DoorDash. It made a lot of money off me. And like I spent all my money. But anyway, between DoorDash and Instacart, I spent all my money. But anyway, I picked up this book called Boundless Heart by Christine Feldman. And I read it. And it's about the four immeasurables. Four immeasurables are kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And it contains in it, though, and those, it's great. It's a great book. All the chapters are good. It's really good. I taught a class on it, and I may teach a class on it again because I like it so much. But there's a section on it on this teaching, the Metta Sutta. And it really spoke to me. That's a text that really spoke to me. and I reference it whenever I can get it into some talk or teaching, I will bring it in because I like it so much. But it's the Buddhist teaching on loving kindness. And it really spoke to me, and I started doing this metta meditation, and that's what helped me. That's what helped me. Not mindfulness of breathing, not studying Zen koans, not vipassana, not any of these things. Just metta. Just cultivating love. It's counterintuitive. Maybe, well, it's not really counterintuitive, but like, I'm better at paying attention because I'm cultivating love. Okay. I'm better at making good choices because I'm cultivating love. These things are true. So, where was I going with this? So, that sort of became the center of my practice, and I started just to see everything differently. And I was, when the Rime Center reopened, I was pretty excited to come back. But love and compassion, man. A lot of these old Theravada texts I discovered. Well, I'll provide one example, but this is true across the board of many of these old Theravada texts. There's this book called Manual of Insight. Manual of Insight. Very heavy book, but this is a book by a teacher named Mahasi Sayadaw from Burma, and it's like 600 pages. It's huge. It's like an encyclopedia. There's a lot of material. But what I want to share with you is this book is supposed to be like the preeminent insight meditation guide, okay? Like, if you've heard of teachers like Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein, this is where their teaching comes from, is from this book, The Manual of Insight, okay? Where a lot of their teaching comes from. Maybe not 100%, that'd be ridiculous, but it's where a lot of insight meditation teachings come from this, okay? And so I got this book, and what I want to tell you about it is, this is a book about meditation, right? It's a meditation guide, and people get this book and read it because they think, oh, this is where the real, solid, detailed, helpful, useful meditation teachings from a real expert are. And the thing about this book, though, is this. The first 150 pages are about ethics. Say that again. The first 150 pages are about ethics. This is a book about how to be an amazing meditator, how to transcend suffering, and to overcome birth and death. And the first 150 pages are about ethics, compassion, connecting with other people. This is not rare in the Theravada tradition. It's important because, well, what happens if we're training in this and we're unethical? What happens? Well, there's all sorts of things that can get in our way. You know, Mark Twain said, if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember what lie you told. And I think about that sometimes. But the point is that if we're connecting with other people as well as we can, and as much as we can, it's going to get easier. It's all easier, okay? It's hard to be mindful if you're driven by selfishness. It's hard. But also, like, I'm here to make friends, you know? How do you make friends? Compassion and love. That's how, right? Cultivating those things is how you connect with other people. Connecting with other people is good, especially if you have a sangha, a spiritual community, because, well, I'll be so bold as to say this, I'm here to make friends. I'm here to make friends, because if we are connecting with people who have the same spiritual goals as us, what does that do? It motivates and inspires us. it motivates and inspires us. So even from a selfish perspective, we could say compassion's still good. And, you know, people say there's sort of a reputation. Some people think the Theravada tradition is light on compassion teachings, and I don't know why, because metta practice is a significant practice. And in fact, I went to, it was a little bit of a tangent, but I went to the Washington, D.C. Buddhist Vihara, which is the oldest Theravada temple in the United States. And I met a, connected with a teacher named Bhante Dhammasiri. And he told me, one guy had a lot of compassion because I showed up unannounced at the temple, which is not really receiving visitors still. And he let me in, gave me a tour, and gave me a teachings. And he spent like 2 hours with me. Just awesome, right? But he told me his main practice is metta practice. And he actually, he gave me a blessing and gave me this white string that I have. And he chanted the Metta Sutta in his language, which is Sinhalese. He was from Sri Lanka. So it's foundational. These teachings are foundational. And we could make a mistake if we start to think that Buddhism is just in your head. Okay? It's not. It's all one. Mind and body are connected intimately. But two, like, love is really important here. And if we start to think it's not, we could get off track. If we start, like, thinking, like, how can I use my meditation practice to increase my wealth, right? Or whatever. So, when I think about love and compassion, I think about this. In Buddhism, we say things like, I vow to save all beings. We say things like that, and that is a crazy and bold thing to say. And I like to add a little line to that, though. When I think about that, I think about, I want to save all beings from myself, okay? Because that's, guess what, right? I have more power to save beings from myself than from anything else, right? I can do a lot of good in this world just by not being a jerk. Just by not making enemies out of everything all the time. We can contribute to the well-being and harmony in the world by causing less harm. If we can learn to cause less harm, then we're going to like ourselves more, and other people are going to like us more. So even from a sort of selfish standpoint, right? People remember when you're nice to them. People remember when you say their name, right? I'm really bad at remembering names, but I'm trying to be better because I know, like, it seems like a very little thing, but it's not, right? In Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, he said, remember that a person's name is, to that person, the sweetest and most important sound in any language. And that's just because you make people feel seen. That's useful, right? So, we're encouraged to cultivate a boundless heart. This is to direct positive feelings as widely as we can. Metta, meditation practice, is one. And Tonglen meditation practice is another one. These are designed to help us open our hearts. And of course, it's easy to feel compassion if one of your loved ones has a bad experience. It's a little harder if it's a stranger, and it's still harder if it's someone you maybe don't like. And when we talk about, like, compassion for everyone, love for everyone, that's not to say you should go from 0 to 100. That's not to say if you've been abused, you should be trying to right now cultivate love and compassion for your abuser. You might have a lot of stuff to work with. I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about maybe someone who annoys you, or maybe maybe the mailman, maybe a bully from school who didn't bully you that bad, but it was just kind of mean, you know? So I'm not necessarily saying open your heart to your abuser, but I do think it's relevant here. The meditation teacher Stephen Levine said, you can let someone into your heart without letting them into your house. I think, oh, right? Forgive and don't forget, right? So I think about that sometimes too. So, some people think compassion is the same thing as pity, and it's not. Because pity, and in the same way, I compare compassion and pity to self-confidence versus narcissism. And it's the same sort of thing, because compassion is good and pity is less good. Why is pity less good? It's rooted in superiority. It's rooted in superiority. Oh, you poor thing, right? And compassion is more, I want to lift you up. I want to join in your suffering, share in your suffering with you, right? And so I think of self-confidence and narcissism because self-confidence is, I can do this. I can handle this, okay? Narcissism is, I can do this, I can handle this, and you can't, or and only I can, right? So self-confidence, like, I hope we all make it. I hope I make it, I hope we all make it, okay? And we need to have also some self-love and some self-compassion. Sometimes we do things that harm ourselves, you know, and sometimes there's something I want to do that I shouldn't do, and it's less loving to myself to give in to that temptation, you know? Whatever, your addiction, right? It's less loving to yourself to give in to that, even though it sounds real good, right? So we need to remember that giving in to temptation and putting our desires ahead of others are not the same as self-love and self-compassion. If you start to think that, that's troubling. These things don't really serve us. It's not a good way to live, to give in to all your temptations all the time, to open the bag of chips and always finish it, right? Or whatever. Or to have another drink, even though you're already feeling wobbly, whatever you're doing. And I'd like to compare these three things that are attachment, obsession, and love. Okay? Okay? Attachment is about me. I'm attached. And obsession is about them. It's about the object of my attachment. It's about them. Okay? And love, love's about us. Love's about our connection. Aww, right? So attachment can be about what you can do for me, how you can make me feel. And obsession can be about, it could be about, it could even sound kind of good. Obsession could be about what I can do for you. But love, love is where it's at. It's about what we can do together, okay? So, I hope this talk's been helpful.
Thank you for listening and have a good day.